No.
What's your least favorite scary movie?
4 more days till Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. 4 more days till Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the absurd in all of our favorite
and least favorite
scary movies.
Because we believe every horror movie rightfully has its fan base.
Even when we don't always get it.
My name is Travis.
My name's Jesse. And despite what that opening may make you think, no, we're not talking about Halloween 3 again.
Haha, we gotcha. We're doing 3 again. Nope.
No, it just seemed like too good of an opportunity to pass up. Also, I've been singing that all weekend because we passed a Silver Shamrock shirt and I realized we were officially in the single digits to the best day of the year.
Yep. Getting close.
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and say now. We're already behind schedule this week because we had Scarefest. And I am delirious with exhaustion. So this is either going to be a very short episode because I can't get my thoughts together, or it's going to be a very long episode because I can't get my thoughts together.
I think it's going to be that one. Our Halloween episodes tend to go pretty hard.
However, I do not have as many notes on this one as I do other ones. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. First, with our announcements, we figure we definitely need to recap Scarefest for you all because it was just such a wonderful weekend.
Oh, man. It was like some of the most fun that I've had.
Okay. Let's kind of go through it day by day. Highlights. Okay. So Thursday night was the kickoff. And I just got to shout out our new buddy, Brady.
Yeah, Brady.
And to a lesser degree, his dad, Eric, but especially Brady. They let us join in on their trivia team. And I'm going to be honest, I think we held him back. I've never seen somebody his age with as much horror knowledge as he has.
And this kid knew his shit. Down to the year certain movies were made, he could just quote it. It was kind of impressive. So we lucked out. So yeah.
So that was really, that was a fun way to start it off. Even though there was also a Carrie Underwood concert going on that none of us was aware of. So when we get to Lex Live, event parking was $25.
See, the night almost was a disaster.
It almost was.
Had we not parked and walked like over a mile to get to the venue.
Yeah.
But once, it was shitty at first, but as soon as we showed up, trivia hadn't started.
However, if we hadn't had to have that mile walk, then we might not have ever stopped at the liquor store that makes you walk up through the drive-thru.
Yeah, we did a drive-thru.
That was a weird experience in life.
Very.
Okay, so then Friday was the first like official day of Scarefest. And it also is the first time that we've become the type of cosplayers that people just want like pictures of you.
Yeah, it was a weird, fun experience.
Yeah, but like a very flattering kind of weird.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
I like it. It's fun having these people get super excited for the thing that you're dressing up. And it's kind of rewarding because we spend a lot of time working on this stuff.
Yes.
So to be able to like have people acknowledge it and also be as excited about it as we are, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, so we were Columbia and Eddie from Rocky Horror Picture Show. Shout out to the people that said Columbia instead of Magenta.
You know who you are. The real ones out there.
But that was, it was a fun day. That was the day we met Robert Englund. So they had like this whole line pass situation where like your group would go up when it was called. So that I was very tense the entire afternoon and evening waiting for our group to be called. And it got, everything happened all at once. So we spent the first couple of hours just wandering around because there were hundreds of vendors, like so many things going on. We just keep hearing them say group A and we were group B. You know, we're just wandering around and then we decide that we're going to stop at a couple of booths that night. And we go to the trauma booth. Lloyd Kaufman's there.
Oh, yeah, Dad.
With Toxie. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. So we're there. We find out he's doing just free autographs and pictures and like you can buy merch and stuff, which we bought merch. We're always like, we support trauma. That's
I mean, he's such a nice guy. He doesn't like, he's there for the fans.
Yeah. So we're waiting in line. I get a call that I was one of the people picked for trivia on stage. So we have to run back to the other side of the venue so I can be up there. And then while I'm on stage, they call our group for Robert Englund. And so there's just so much happening at once. And I was freaking out, and I messed up at trivia, and I told the host I was like, don't worry, we're local. We know who really runs the show. Tell Don I blame him for these questions I got. Because the next day they were much easier.
Line was chaotic. Met a cool guy there, chatted with him for a while. Mm-hmm. In the process, I also pissed with Kane Hodder.
Yeah, they totally crossed streams. We're not supposed to say that on air, but he never got the NDA signed, so it's fine.
I'm zipping it. Bro code right there.
I do want to say this is a total like fake inside joke that we came up with a stranger in the line. I don't want somebody out there to be like, Travis definitely crossed streams with Kane Hodder.
But I was there with him.
Yeah.
And as soon as he walked into the bathroom, he said, fuck off. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? And I turned around, I was like, oh shit, it's Kane.
Yeah. Like, he was shouting at somebody out in the hall.
He's like, you know what? Sure. Yeah, I'll fuck off. I'll get out of here. This is your urinal. I would have done it. But yeah, so we met Robert long way. It was nice to finally get to see him in person, get our little bobblehead signed.
I think he was the only one that I like really nervous babbled at the whole weekend.
He's the big draw there. He's the biggest. I mean, you'd already met Kane before, so.
Yeah, so but I think this being my third con, I was a lot more normal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Robert was like the first star we like actually spoke to. So I was like,
yeah, he was our first autograph.
Yeah. So I was like very, very like nervous and babbling. But then after that, we went back to Lloyd Kaufman's booth so we could actually meet him. We talked to some of the Traumettes too.
They were nice.
They were really, really friendly. One of them had actually just auditioned for a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
So, and she's going to be, she's the backup, or it's not backup. Fuck. What is, I used to do plays. I know reserve, the word.
Stand in.
No. That, why can't I think of the word?
We got to go. We got so much to go through.
Okay, anyway. So she's going to be Eddie. Like the backup for Eddie. So we're in the trauma booth, right? And we're just talking to Lloyd Kaufman, and he's the nicest person ever. And like, which tracks with horror. If you know anything about horror, like the people that make the grossest stuff are the nicest people.
Okay, I want to say this about him, though. Like, people will say that these people are great, and they're like super personable, and to a degree, they are, but, you know, like, nobody's ever, like, super open and welcoming. Lloyd Kaufman is legitimately that guy.
His booth was a party the entire weekend.
It was. Like, it was honestly awesome. I'm so happy that he was there this year. But go ahead. Sorry.
So what happened was we're there, we're chatting, we did our picture, we're, you know, just shooting the shit before we are going to go on to another booth. And then over walks Robert Patrick. T-1000 himself, and he wants a picture with Lloyd Kaufman, which that's legit. Like, okay, cool. And we're like kind of trying to edge our way out of the booth, so we don't want to like, you know, intrude on this like moment, but we're clearly not invited to be part of this. And then Lloyd Kaufman goes, this is my daughter Jessie and my son Travis, they're gonna be in the picture with us. And we're like, Dad, thank you.
Yeah, so like we were just calling him Dad the rest of the weekend. It was
like,
cool.
We saw him at the bar, and I was like, I'm telling everybody you're Dad now. I love you, bye.
He offered to buy us a drink, too. Yeah, he's like, yeah, hey, you want a drink? And I'm like, no, sorry, Dad.
Yeah. Sorry, Dad, we have to drive.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I started kind of in my mind. I was thinking, you mentioned the T-1000. I don't know why I didn't think of this, Annie, this weekend, but how many times do you think fans like do the run up to him? Like, how often is he being chased wherever he goes by these super serious people with the weird fucking hands that are like chopping their way to him? I'm sorry, I just thought about that, and that guy probably lives in constant fear. Okay, yes.
Okay. But yeah, so that was really fun. And then by that point, things were closing up for the night. I cannot emphasize that how long Robert Englund's line was, that even with a reserve spot, we were in line for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It was worth it. We knew it was going to be lengthy. So we go over to Scaryoki, which is across the street at Lex Live again. And us being over the top. What? Us over the top? We obviously decide we're going to do the time warp as we're in our Rocky Horror getup. And the crowd fucking ate that shit up. Oh, yeah. Everybody was having a good time. We're all having a blast. So we go and we sit down and we see Brian Bremer. He is in Pumpkinhead and Society, which if you've listened to our show, you know that we adore both of these weird ass social commentary, amazing effects and creature work movies.
Yeah.
And he'd been at trivia the night before. We didn't really, like, see. It wasn't, like, a mingling situation. This was a mingling situation. So Travis is getting us drinks, and I kind of make eye contact with him. And it's one of those things where, like, is he going to, like, are we going to talk to each other? And he, like, comes over, and he's like, love your costumes, love Rocky Horror, blah, blah, blah. And we're talking back and forth, you know, just, like, having, you know, what you said about Lloyd Kaufman, absolutely true for Brian Bremer,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, he was seriously, like, just... I can't even, like, I will gush too much about him.
I think we got special treatment from him, though. Yeah. Like, I don't really know if everybody got the amount of, like, detailed interactions that we did with him.
So what happened was he was like, I want to do karaoke, but I want to sing science fiction double feature, and I want you guys to back me up. And so we're just on stage singing science fiction double feature with him. It was so much fun. It was amazing.
Yeah, so it was a crazy experience. All right, we have so much that we went over through on Scarefest. I'm sorry. We have two more days. I know this is a long intro. You guys are here to listen about Halloween, but yeah. I don't care.
It's fine. So Saturday, we're dressed as the Driller Killers, and the amount of people that understood the reference and were excited about it was amazing. Of course, we ran into some mutant fam at the conference, too. Yay.
Yeah, Kendra and Joe Freakatron.
Yes, well, as is his full name.
on his birth certificate, Joe Freakatron. No, I want to shout them out because they're cool people. Yeah. And, you know, they're on Twitter. They're nice. Good follows. But they were cool.
Yeah, and cheered very loudly for us during the costume contest. Everybody that understood, everybody that's seen Slumber Party Massacre said we were robbed.
Yeah.
So that's nice to know. So Saturday we also met Chuck.
Yes.
And we told him about Talia's poop button.
Yes.
And he loved it.
And he signed our Friday the 13th box set, Heavy Shit.
Yeah.
As Chuck. Yes. So we got to show that to Talia and she appreciated it.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Met Shelly.
Yes. Met Shelly. Talked about, you know, the fact that he's an icon because of Jason. Jason his mask. Who else did we meet? I feel like we did a lot. We did a lot on Saturday. Saturday was the longest day by and large.
Yeah. Tarman.
You met Tarman. Yeah. Alan Troutman. He almost wasn't there, but we're so excited he was. And he was he did the most precise signature I've ever seen. Because he was very concerned about messing up the cover of our 4K.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a fine point Sharpie, and he was so distraught, but he was so careful about it.
It was funny how they were all like, this is so small. And I'm like, this is like, there's so much open space on here. You can write anywhere. Like, I get it. It's fine.
They didn't want to cover up the artwork.
And then, like, whenever we sent that one to Felissa Rose, where it's like barely any room, she's like, oh, no, there's plenty of room.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to write over the whole thing.
Yeah. That's Felissa's style. I love and respect it.
Yeah. So he was real friendly. We
hung out with PJ and Eric.
Yeah. Oh my God. We didn't even mention Rob Mello emceed karaoke the night before, and he could be like a legit motivational speaker and professional hype man.
He's fun.
He was having a good time. Yeah. So we did the indie filmmaker panel where we learned a lot more about Eric and CJ's upcoming. Well, we already knew a decent bit about
Eric and PJ.
What did I say?
CJ.
Oh shit. yeah. We learned about their upcoming film New Fear's Eve they're crowdfunding for, and it's actually gonna have Dave Sheridan and Felissa Rose in it,
and Jesse
Emmy.
Jesse's gonna be in a scene with Dave Sheridan.
Yeah
it's gonna be cool.
It's gonna be fun.
Something to look out for in the future.
I wasn't gonna go there that quickly, but you know.
Well, I can cut that if you want.
I just want to say, like, go if you want to support a local, if you want to support an indie film. And if you're a Kentucky friend, you want to support local filmmakers, go to their Indiegogo. They've got all kinds of different perks, from ranging from even as cheap as $10. So I'm very personally motivated for this movie to get made now.
yeah, so we met all those people. Ran into some other cool people out there. Ran into we did the costume contest. I ran into a really cool, what's his name from American Psycho? Jason Bateman?
Yeah, Patrick Bateman.
Patrick Bateman. Jason Bateman's the actor. I called him Jason Bateman in line to him, and I knew, I said, fuck, I'm sorry, that's wrong.
I'm pretty sure his name's Tucker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was cool.
Yeah.
Met him. He was very enthusiastic, very into character.
We had a whole little standoff with our weapons. That was fun.
Yeah, that was really fun. After Party was awesome.
Yes, the DJ was going hard. Mm-hmm. Jimothy Beckett?
Something.
Yeah, he was in there. Candy Corn. He's got a lot of energy, so he was real fun. We got a Terrifier poster. We had a real good time with that.
Danced
a lot. And then Sunday was where we got to like chat with some people, because Sunday's always a little bit less crowded. So we got to see Kane right away. Travis actually got to talk to him, and I was like,
yeah,
I'm sure you don't remember a lot of people, and I don't blame you for not remembering me specifically, but I am the person who told you that Jason Takes Manhattan changed my life. And he said, oh yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah. Yeah. So finally got a picture with him. It was cool. Went over to Dave Sheridan after that. I had him sign our Victor Crowley shit, finally.
Yes. And he's like, why didn't I sign this at the Jamboree? Yeah. You remember talking to us.
Yeah, we talked about
that. And we're like, well, because we didn't see the script until after we'd already bought a bunch of shit from you. So, and he's like, well, that's fair.
He's another guy. You see him at a con, go see him. He will talk your fucking head off.
Yeah.
Dude just likes to interact with people. Yeah. He's awesome. Immediately after that, we went to Felissa. It was my turn to be killed by her this time.
Yes, and she immediately posted it to Instagram.
Yes, that was very cool.
Yeah, and she was like, let me tag you. And then, like, I gave her our podcast Instagram, and she seemed confused. And I was just like, I don't use my, my personal is so locked down. I don't want it tagged. So I was like, that's the one that I'm going to be sharing with everybody. Yeah. And she's always such a delight. And she's very big on, like, she doesn't like to call fans fans because she doesn't think of it that way. She thinks of horror really as a community. Like, she just loves people.
Yeah.
And she wants to spread joy. And it just so happens that her profession gives her this outlet to do it.
She's the one that coached Brian Bramer. Remember he said it's all about the love.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because this was his first, like, big con.
Yeah.
I think is what he said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also met Miguel Nunez.
Oh, yeah. Miguel Nunez. Oh,
who
yeah.
I had a Guns N' Roses jam session with at the party the night before.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
But he went to sign our 4K. And we unfortunately learned there were some issues with residuals for that.
Not from him. He got excited, but, yeah, and showed it to the girl who played Tina in that movie. And Tina was like, yeah, by the way, I barely overheard it. And she was saying basically she's still like awaiting residuals for that or something.
Yeah, so there's some unfortunate.
Miguel walked back over. He's like, that's a crock of shit.
But then he was like, I wish I had Alan's pen. And we were like, well, it was just a regular Sharpie. He was just very delicate with it. And he took that as a personal challenge.
It's a fat signature. But you know what? It's okay.
It was okay. Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Not Spider-Man, but Spider, man. But yeah. Yeah. And we said bye to everybody. And then it was a very fun, very exhausting weekend.
Yes.
So sorry for running behind on some of our social stuff, like our polls and our reviews, but we got all of that and more from everybody, so
it was and there's so much more to the weekend than all of that. That was, like, as rambly as that might have sounded, that was the condensed version of everything we could have talked about from this weekend. So,
but okay I promise, so now, we're about to talk about Halloween,
but we gotta do our movie review real quick of what we've watched this week.
Rapid fire.
So on the 16th, we watched Dude Bro Party Massacre 3. That was my pick. We watched it on Tubi because you wouldn't let me watch the night before.
You keep bringing that up as if, like, that's a thing that I should be ashamed of. But no, I wasn't feeling it that night.
Well, did you feel it Sunday night?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's such stupid fun. Absolutely, go watch it. There's not a one or two. A couple of people have asked me if you have to.
No, just
jump straight into 3. Then on Monday, we didn't do a ton of new movies this week because we were so busy, like, trying to catch up on cosplays. So on Monday, we watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Very fun.
Trav's pick. We watched it on Prime.
I'm going to get some Bill Moseley before. I didn't even see him at all this weekend. Ah, fuck, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe next time.
Yeah. I met him last year, so.
Yeah.
I got to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Tuesday, the 18th, we did watch something new. We watched Sissy. That was my pick. It was on Shudder. Immediately following, we watched New Year, New You on Hulu, which I enjoyed Sissy. I like New Year, New You a little bit better.
I do too.
They're very similar stories. I'd recommend watching both.
Yeah, they're both fine. They're both good watches, I'd say.
On the 19th, we watched Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Yes, because we were starting to get prepped for our cosplays.
Yeah, that was Trav's pick. We watched it. We watched the last drive-in version on Shudder. Daddy Shudder. Friday, we doubled up because we knew we would probably have to be making up for it over the weekend, which turned out to be true. So we watched Rocky Horror Picture Show on our DVD. That was my pick. Yep. And then Return of the Living Dead on 4K. That ended up making up for Saturday night.
Yeah.
But Friday night, we caught popcorn after Scaryoki on most the last drive-in. Yeah, most of it.
I had already seen the beginning, so I knew what all was going on.
Yeah, that's a fun one. That's I like the concept movie. Of it. You yeah. get like it's kind of a mini anthology movie, but like it's not wraparound. It's like a basic plot and then tiny movies within the movie.
Yeah,
so it's cool. Fun. I like the mosquito one.
Yeah, the mosquito one's cool.
And then yesterday we watched the OG Slumber Party Massacre on our 4K. That was Trav's pick. Which is always a fun time.
And this movie, Halloween 2.
And Halloween 2. And Scary Movie.
Yeah. So we what?
Yeah. We got to the point where we wanted to not take a nap when we got home because it would have been like napping until it was bedtime and then we wouldn't have gotten to sleep at the right time. But then we overdid it and now we were so tired that I didn't sleep solidly through the night. I was overtired.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping tonight I can balance it out.
All right. Well, let's get our polls real quick. What's the most essential slumber party feature? Twitter says 17% of them at least say pillow fights.
Okay.
8% says brownies.
Okay.
58% says pizza. 17% says champagne.
Jump bag.
On Instagram, 12% pillow fights. 6% brownies. 75% pizza. 6% champagne.
Okay. Go to our socials and check out the pictures that I painstakingly chose out for this.
Yeah. I'm choosing pillow fights because I love that picture of the Beatles that you chose. No other reason other than that. I lost my shit when you showed me that when I was driving yesterday. That's hilarious.
I think as an adult or as a child, I would have said pizza was the most essential one.
Champagne now.
Yeah, now it's definitely champagne.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right. We're going to officially go on to Halloween 2. Travis, while you're editing, maybe make a note of the timestamp so we can just throw it in the show notes. Movie discussion starts at this time.
Okay. We'll give you all a warning. This is the longest we've talked pre-movie. I think
it was important to discuss Scarefest because they did the organizers, staff, guests, vendors, everybody did such a good job, and it's important to acknowledge how great it was.
If you've never been to a con and you are on the fence about it, do it, because it's some of the most fun you will have if you are a big horror fan, and if you're listening to this, I would assume you are.
Yes.
So, by all means.
So, on to Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. Okay, this came out August 28th, 2009.
I remember because I went and saw this. We were at my friend's house for his birthday, and he lived within walking distance of the theater, so we walked to watch this on his birthday. He was finally able enough. Sorry. Go ahead.
And we watched the theatrical release, which I'm kind of sad about. I prefer the theatrical release of 1, but I prefer the director's cut of 2.
See, I don't remember the differences too much. I know that it has a completely different ending.
Yes. And there just some of the stuff that I like about 2 is a little bit more prominent in the director's cut.
Okay.
But we watched it. We have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So, and if I had to choose, because we have the 2-pack of 1 and 2.
The technically Canadian one.
Technically Canadian. Just like our good buddy Steve at the Decision Reel, technically Canadian. So if I had to choose between, if we're going to have the director's cut 2-pack or the theatrical cut 2-pack, I'd rather have the theatrical cut because that I, by and large, prefer 1's theatrical cut to the director's cut. Okay, so as of the 23rd of October, this is available for streaming in the U.S. on Peacock, Fubo TV, Hulu Premium, YouTube TV Premium, or Sling TV Premium. Or you could rent it through Redbox, YouTube, Google Play, or Vudu. Written and directed by Rob Zombie. Music by Tyler Bates. And special effects makeup by Wayne Toth.
Okay.
Starring Scout Taylor Compton as Laurie Strode. Brad Dourif as Sheriff Brackett.
Yeah.
Malcolm McDowell as Sam Loomis.
Yeah.
Tyler Mayne as Michael Myers.
Oh, yeah.
Sherry Moon Zombie as Ghost Mom Deborah Myers. Ooh. And Chase Wright Vanek as Young Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Travis.
I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. That's weird. I should go.
Budget or Bughead?
This is budget. Are you kidding me? The last one was budget.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that. But, like, was it more?
I don't remember what it was last time.
What is it this time?
What was it last time?
I think it was, like, $35 million.
Okay. Less than that.
What is it?
$15
million. You know what? Maybe it was $15 million. I don't know.
See, this is why I didn't want to tell you.
Oh. Well, I thought that... Okay, it might be... Would they do that, though? But they'd be like, hey, Rob, make the sequel, but we're not giving you as much money.
Well, hold on. We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll talk about that. It opened at $16 million with a worldwide gross of $39
million. Very nice.
It currently stands at 4.8 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yep. I can see that.
I picked three movies from 2009. Two of them are also remakes, and one of them is just a movie that I know you love, and I wanted to throw that in there while you're sorting out all of your feelings on Halloween, too. I'm trying to confuse you.
2009? I bet one of them is a Hatchet movie.
No.
Okay.
House of the Devil.
Oh, yeah, man. That one's... All right. That's some good Ty West slow burn right there.
Came out April 25th, 2009. A budget of $900,000.
Ah, man. Yeah, that sounds right. It doesn't feel like a big budget movie, so that sounds pretty accurate.
A worldwide gross?
It's going to be tiny.
101,000.
Not so well.
But it has a 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yeah. See, now that's one that has staying power. It's stayed relevant. It's a good movie. That's Dee Wallace in it, too, which is weird for like a second.
The second movie, Sorority Row.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
That one's a fun one.
Remake, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That came out September 11, 2009. Budget of $12.5 million in a worldwide gross of $27 million. And it's got a 5.1 out of 10 on IMDb.
That movie is like the definition of in the middle.
And here's the thing, too. I love... Josh Stolberg and Evan Goldfinger.
No, I don't mean that as an insult. I'm talking about rating and performance.
Yeah, no, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. I feel like a lot of their movies, like people always are like, people either tend to really love their stuff or really hate their stuff.
Not only that, though, they seem to do a lot of remakes like Piranha, and people are very touchy with remakes. Yeah. If some people, if they hear the word remake, they automatically dismiss it. But no, that's a fun movie.
And then the third movie is one I saw in theaters. My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Because guess what? January horror movies. So I got to see it for my birthday.
Ah, cool.
January 16th, 2009. Nice. Budget of $15 million. And this one grossed $100
million. Wow, man. They didn't do any sequels to that?
Mm-mm.
See, I think that they almost were going to. That's another one of the guys that worked on one of the Saw movies, I think. The Marcus Dunstan guy.
Oh yeah. He worked, I think he did six.
Yeah. Yeah, he did that one and he did seven for sure. I know that.
The Collector. That one's got a 5.4 out of 10 on IMDb.
Okay. Not bad.
Tagline.
Just one. Okay. Again.
Family is forever.
This sounds like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It does.
No, I don't like it. I don't care for it. That's disappointing because it's also a Halloween movie and those are supposed to have like 50 fucking taglines.
Yeah. I just wish it was a little bit dumber or something.
Yeah, they also have to be dumb. That's also like a criteria.
Okay. So fun facts. The director's cut adds about 14 minutes of footage, and it includes a lot more themes it includes a little bit more of an exploration on trauma, specifically gives a little bit more light to Annie and a little bit more depth to what how Laurie's trauma is presenting.
Yeah, I don't feel like we get a lot with Annie.
Yeah. And it also notoriously kills off Loomis, Michael, and Laurie.
See, I thought that one... Oh, yeah, yeah, she does die in that one. Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Okay. Which was very intentional. Rob Zombie did not want to make a third one, which didn't matter because the studio had... after this one came out, they already started developing a third one.
Yes, I love these.
And it was going to be Halloween 3D.
Oh, see, you did find one. I was telling Jesse, if she's doing the research, she has to find a what could have been. Here we go, guys. We got one.
Yep, and it would have followed Laurie Strode in the behavioral health hospital with Michael Myers stalking her and his mask, like, fused to his face from the fire.
Okay. I like that. That's, they almost, like, took that idea and put it in Halloween Kills.
A little bit.
Yeah, to an extent. You know, sure.
But Rob Zombie had absolutely no interest. That's why, you know, the theatrical cut leaves it
open.
Yeah. Right. The director's cut, they're definitively dead.
That's he probably...
didn't want to do it. He fucking hates Look, the Weinsteins.
This guy fucking knew what he was doing because he's like, all right, if you're making her live, it's going to be a shitty ending. I'm going to see to it. Like, she's going to wear the mask out. That's how stupid this is.
Yeah, so he... did not like working with the Weinsteins, even more so now in light of everything that's come out.
Good for him for departing from that.
Yeah.
They did, Dimension, I think, did a lot of his early... No, it wasn't Dimension. It was Lionsgate, I think. Never mind.
But yeah, so he said that they were really, really micromanaging the shoot. He said he felt super micromanaged on the first one. He didn't have any freedom to work with the story. And the only reason he agreed to come back for two was that he was going to be able to have... creative control over it, and they were going to make it anyway, and he didn't want somebody to take what he had started and didn't get to do the way he wanted to do and then do it a completely different way than he would have done.
Okay.
Because he felt in part one that Laurie was kind of dully written. He didn't like in part two that there was a lack of like exploring her trauma of what she had gone through, so he kind of wanted to bring more to her and more to that exploration of PTSD. So that was his whole goal with this.
Okay, that's an interesting take.
But he said that they were so involved in the production process, and they were so, because the first one was fairly successful.
Yeah.
And they were so protective over it, and they were being so nitpicky. And this interview I read was talking about how there would be points where they would show him clips from the first one, and he'd be like, you know I made it, right?
That's funny.
Yeah. So he's fucking over them.
I don't blame him, but, man, okay. Never mind. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's the gist of my fun facts.
Oh, it yeah. is? Okay, well, that's yeah. cool. I mean, you know, I respect him getting to do what he wanted to do with it. You know, not a lot of people are afraid to explore with this type of stuff. But usually a lot of times when you do that, you open yourself up to all kinds of people hating it because it's different.
Which is what happened with this one.
And some others.
So I'll let you go ahead and get your thoughts out of the way. I've got a lot of thoughts for this.
Okay.
So what's your good, bad, ugly, and absurd?
All right, so the good... I'm going to say, just like I did for Halloween 1, like his remake on that one, as a standalone slasher, I think it works really well. I like it. Once again, the kills are pretty over the top, pretty brutal. Michael is super intimidating. I don't know. It's that part right there I really enjoy. So I actually did have a good time watching that this time around. Bad. I feel like having watched Halloween Ends, I'm like coming to this movie a little bit more differently because Halloween Ends did so much different also, but like they went way more different.
Yeah.
So I was going to say like, it's really weird to like a weird decision to choose Michael without his mask. I don't ever want to see his face. It just is like, you see it in the original for like a second. And that's it. And then every now and then you can get like little glimpses, but like he's going full on no mask sometimes. And then he puts the mask on again other times. Like there's no consistency.
Well, and here's the thing. I know you mentioned in the first one that he was supposed to say boo.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know if it's in the director's cut or if it was cut from that also, but he also talks to Loomis in this one and he says like die or something like
that. Oh, he talks to Loomis. Wow. Yeah. What the fuck? See, you know, I do want to see that. I would like to see that. That's fine. It's got to be done sparingly if you do anything like that. And I feel like in this movie, you get a lot of maskless Michael.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan of it. I'm sorry. I'm a diehard Halloween fan. The mask is so iconic. You have to have it. It's such a good mask. So that, yeah. The ugly. There's some like, it's a Rob Zombie movie. It's kind of like, it's going to naturally be ugly.
Yeah.
Just his whole style of dialogue and characters.
Richard Brake's.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, he's like such a nice, like a cool guy too. And he makes him like be this asshole that you don't want to hear. But that type of stuff, I get it. He's trying to like make a vulgar character or whatever. But at times it's just a little bit much.
Yeah.
And the absurd, the absurdity of them thinking that they could get away with recasting young Michael.
Well, I think what happened was because, you know, at that age, kids can just kind of sprout up overnight.
Yeah.
And this was on IMDb, so it's not necessarily verified. But supposedly they did shoot those scenes with Dagfertch, and it was just too noticeable how much he had grown. Which doesn't make any sense because they were flashback scenes. They could have just said it was slightly older.
I mean, yeah. Probably his rap career took off. So he
we never shared the link to the video we found.
I need to remind everybody that he is a fucking rapper right now. You can look him up on YouTube. Jesse found him.
Yes.
I highly recommend it.
I'll see if I can remember to throw the link into the show notes to the video.
Please do. So yeah, that's it. It's absurd. Yeah.
Oh my god. Sorry, not meaning to come back around to Scarefest, but it's very important because you said I don't know what it is that reminded me of it. So this movie's Muna's era.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
We found the unrated version of Stay Alive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's something to look forward to.
So that shit's happening. We're probably going to just do a whole new episode of it on the Patreon. That's going to be our bonus episode for next month.
Yeah, I am excited.
We're really excited.
Yeah, sorry. We had breaking news there. Okay, so, right,
so what's rating. Your score?
Man, I'm conflicted. Like, there's a lot that I appreciated this time around that I didn't before, but there's still just enough about it to make me mad. So I'm going to give it a 6.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's not bad. Look, I'm not lying whenever I say Halloween Ends really changed how I approach this movie. It had a pretty big impact. So, I was like, maybe I was too hard on it. That was my reaction. Instead of me doing that with Halloween Kills, because I already loved that one, I'm like, man, maybe I was too hard on Halloween too.
Okay, so I have joked around that I'm not going to say I'm a Halloween 2 apologist because I don't think this movie needs apologizing for. I'd rather say I'm a cheerleader of it.
Wow, so brave.
And I have joked around that there are some of us, you know, and then when I was doing some research on this, I actually found a lot of articles in defense of Halloween 2.
All right, this is the new Halloween 3.
Yeah. So I want to read this small excerpt and then I'm going to go into my good, bad, and ugly because this sums up the thoughts a lot more succinctly than I could.
Okay.
The most rewarding way to read Zombie's drastically superior Halloween 2 is as a course correction to its more conventional predecessor. While the 2007 Halloween commits, at least in part, to Carpenter's winning recipe, 2 really is its own thing, to an aggressive, even alienating degree. The film is by turns dreamy and almost unthinkably vicious, filled with artsy black and white flashbacks and memorably deranged digressional side characters with names like Coroner Hooks and Uncle Meat. It's a proper swing for the fences and an authentic nightmare vision in which long repressed trauma, the kind you don't often see in horror movies because it's simply too painful to witness, roils beneath the surface of a grimy, pitiless genre exercise.
Wow. Okay.
So, all that being said, mm-hmm. What's good about it is I love the exploration of trauma and I like that we see it in different ways.
It is unique. You don't see that.
We've got Lori, who's very self-destructive with where she's at in it. And we've got a foil to her almost as Annie. And this is fleshed out more in the director's cut, but where she's more controlling and she's kind of bottling it all down. In the director's cut, there is a scene where she like kind of, you know, calls out Lori. Because this is before Lori knows that she is Michael's sister. So there's not that family connection as far as they know yet. Instead, what it is that they've both been viciously attacked and Lori is losing her mind, rightfully. Like, she's having a very tough time with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Annie is still having to take care of her house. She's still having to take care of her dad. And now she's also taking care of Lori, and nobody's taking care of her.
Why the fuck is she taking care of her dad?
I think her mom died, and she just kind of...
He's like a fucking grown man. Yeah, you know? But
like he's, you know, they have this whole argument about him like eating healthy and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, she...
I don't mean like taking care of.
No, I know what you mean. She's kind of filling like an actual support role in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
I also think the pacing's better in this one. I'm very aware of the runtime in the 2007 Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm less aware of the runtime in this.
This one, I was like, oh, wow, it's ending now?
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was longer. Maybe I'm used to watching the director's cut.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm so mad at Sherry Moon in this.
Yeah.
Because we literally talked about in the last movie that she did such a good job playing a maternal character.
Yeah. I don't know, like,
what
okay.
happened here?
You know what? Whenever I'm adding to my ugly... those fucking scenes where you just get like these random flashing images of Sherry Moon and like Kid Mike, and they're all like with these skeletons and shit like that. Like it's just popping up constantly throughout the movie at random. And I feel like it was a weird stylistic choice.
I kind of like it because it gave us a look into Michael's psyche without like, I don't know. It was just a different way of doing it.
It messes with me.
Because the first one. We explore his psyche, like, as it's, you know, as things are happening, you know, we see him grow up through it.
Yeah.
And in this one, we're seeing that he never actually really truly grew up. He's like, still he's like still stuck in that mentality where he was as an angry child that was, like, abandoned.
Mm. Okay. Well, still, just not, like, with flashing stupid shit.
The ugly, again... there's some dialogue that's unnecessarily over the top.
Yeah.
But also, like, there's some stuff, and I don't know if it was just, like, tone deaf or if it was intentional, but it comes across as, like, fairly transphobic, and it's, like, played off as a joke, but, like,
with the Frankenfurter thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll probably talk more about it as we get to it, but, like, it just rubs me the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. And then the absurd fucking diva Loomis.
Oh, man. You know, we don't get any groovy Loomis either. Like, no flashbacks
to
him.
He's lost all his groove.
He has. He did not get it back. Man, he goes through the fucking ringer in this movie. Like, he does not catch a break.
He doesn't give anybody else a break.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Rob Zombie fully committed to the asshole character. Okay.
And I respect it.
Yeah. I'm not going to dispute it. God damn you.
I'm not going to dispute it. I'm outspoken. I think that the franchise gets a lot of character through various iterations of Loomis.
Yeah.
But I still think the man's an asshole.
I appreciate Malcolm McDowell making it his own.
Yeah.
Like, it's a completely different character, but you still get the essence of the original. It's just like a nice way to just take it and make it his own thing.
Yeah. All that said, I think I'm gonna give this one a 7.5.
Okay, that's good. I'm not too far off from you, I guess.
No, you're not. So we're starting off at a 6.75.
Okay,
which I think is a very good starting average.
That's very flattering for this movie, definitely.
Okay, all right. So we're starting off. A quote about a white horse. You wrote it down.
Yes, I have it right here. White horse linked to instinct. Purity and the drive of the physical body to release powerful and emotional forces like rage with ensuing chaos and destruction. Excerpt from the subconscious psychosis of dreams.
Okay, I'm gonna throw this out there. Mm-hmm. The white horse thing, I think, was also absurd.
Yeah. What the fuck is it doing there? Why?
And here's the thing. I thought that every time we saw Ghost Mom, that the horse was there.
I did too.
But the horse was there at the beginning and the end, and that's it. Which, I mean, probably like animal shooting rules, you know, whatever they have to like.
I legit thought that this thing was a unicorn for the longest time.
I did too.
Like, I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, fuck. And then, just a normal horse.
Yeah, like, I was just like, okay, well, we don't really get that much of a horse, but... I don't know. Maybe Rob Zombie has a horse friend and was like, hey, can my horse be in your movie?
He's like, okay, we'll make it work.
But what that means is that we're forced to like retcon the flashback to where young Michael's saying that he wants to go home and is asking when he can go home.
This is too jarring with this new kid. Look, I feel like if it's to the point where it's distracting like this, you can just cut that.
Yeah.
You don't need to have him there like that. Or like, I don't know. There's just like a different way to do it.
I just have a slightly older Daig. Like, yeah. I'd rather have that.
I would. Yeah.
And no hate to the kid. It's just Daig Ferch did such a good job in the first one.
And this kid isn't really walking around any of this movie. Just have him look small. And just like have him like
Give Sherry Moon a booster seat and some platform shoes.
Yeah,
and
you don't have to like shoot his actual feet. They're camera tricks, people. These have been done for decades.
You work with Danny Trejo, Rob Zombie. We know you can make people look taller or shorter at your whim.
Well, they didn't have to do that with him and Michael in that movie. Those are both actually very different people. All right, so yeah, after that we get the title card. It's 15 years later.
And we see the end of the first one. And Laurie is walking down the street. She's just full on like end of Carrie, covered in blood.
Mm-hmm.
And Chucky, Sheriff Chucky, pulls up behind her and like takes the gun from her hand. Is like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
By the way, anytime that he says Annie in this movie, it sounds like he's about to say Andy.
Yeah.
And like he goes full Chucky every time he says that.
Annie.
Yeah.
So at the hospital, like she was like almost catatonic out in the street, and then at the hospital she's like fully aware of what's happening and she's screaming. She's like, "Am I gonna die?" This is like rough to look like Scout Taylor Compton, like fucking,
she did it, man. Yeah. She did good, and the effects for this are amazing too, because you're seeing basically the entire surgery, or they're like checking out her body just to see, and they're like, what the fuck happened to her? Her fingers are broken off, like,
yeah, they looks like they got chewed up a little bit.
Yeah, somehow. I don't know what it was, like she was missing a finger or something, I don't know.
Yeah, it's rough. Props to Wayne Toth on these special effects.
Yeah, definitely. That was some gnarly shit.
And this is like a good example of like just quick cuts that you can see, like,
yeah, it lingers enough for you to get like a good idea of what's going down.
Yeah, without it being like super like gore porn.
Yeah.
Which kudos to Zombie on that, because I feel like it's very easy for him to linger in the gore porn area.
Yeah, he doesn't really do that very often, I don't think.
Where between that, we're cutting up with the crime scene cleanup crew, and Richard Brake just making some casual necrophilia commentary. I don't like it. I don't want to linger on it. It's gross.
Excessive.
It's gross. Yeah, like, it's way too much.
So I mean, they're loading up the bodies. They have them all in there. Richard Brake and some other guy are gonna take and transport Michael's body to another county. So they drive off.
Every other movie likes the trope of the coroner that's so desensitized to death that they'll eat.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Rob Zombie's like, how can I take that trope and make it my own? Ah! Obsessed with sex!
Yep. You know, thankfully, though, he got Richard Brake, so at least it's a likable guy saying this shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're talking about that, and then they're like making jokes or something, and then one guy goes, is like, cow! And then the guy, I guess he thought it was a funny joke because he's like, ah!
And it's every car ride with Talia.
Yeah.
She loves the cows. Yeah, she fucking loves cows. Loses her mind when she sees them, which happens quite a bit. We live in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's funny. But they destroy this cow. They destroy themselves. The guy that drove is dead.
Yeah.
Richard Brake's character is like on the brink of death. He says
fuck about 57 times in 20 seconds.
Yeah, he like just rattles him off. He's all bloody. He's like, it's a really gnarly scene.
Yeah.
And then I love.
Yeah, and you don't even see the extent of what's happened to him, but every time he like moves even a little bit, you can see there's a whole new wave of pain.
Yeah,
so
no.
Like Richard Brake is a phenomenal actor.
He's selling it that he is in a lot of pain. I like it. And anyways, I love how Michael enters the scene here, because you hear a little bit of rumbling in the back, and then he kicks the doors open. And the way that they shot that, and like the sound and everything, like it made me be like, holy shit, this is crazy.
Like, and this is how you would feel, because you just trained on Richard Brake's face the entire time.
Yeah.
So, like, you're really in that moment with him.
And I like how, like, there's that pause before he steps out. Like, that anticipation. Oof, so good. So yeah. Creepy. So he goes over there and busts in and...
saws his head off.
Yeah, saws his head off.
And then he goes up to Ghost Mommy and his pony.
Yep. Yep, and then we get Ghost Mom and pony.
So Lori wakes up and she should be more closely monitored than a nurse just like sitting in a chair. Like, she's coming out of surgery, she's coming off of anesthesia. There should be a lot more monitors beeping and stuff going on.
Yeah, I couldn't tell who that person that was in there with her
too. It was a nurse. We see her later when she's like splayed out.
Okay.
His dead body. Oh, okay. Yeah. So Lori goes down the hall somehow. No, and here's the thing, this is all dream sequence.
Yeah.
So at first I'm like, none of this makes sense because I forgot it was a dream. So I'm like, how does she just know where Annie's room is? You know?
Yeah. And then the TV has like that music video playing all the time.
Yeah. White Satin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just like on repeat. So she's in Annie's room and she's crying and she's touching her open wounds. I'm like, please get your grubby hands off of the like.
It's yeah, it's pretty stupid.
Yeah. So Octavia Spencer is like, hey,
I'm Ma.
Yeah. Well, and I heard one of the nurses call her Octavia.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I don't know if that, because then later they say Nurse Daniels. I don't know if it was just like a goof that like.
I feel like it had to have been. Octavia is such a cool name, though. Just use
yeah.
it.
Keep oh, yeah. It. So yeah, so she like goes and gets Lori back and she's like, we need to get you back to your room. And then she gets called and just fucks off, like leaves Lori limping. And I like this because in the original one, Lori has like just a little soft bandage on her foot.
Yeah.
And this time she's got the air cast and she's like clearly not comfortable walking on it.
Yeah.
But what happens is Lori's like, wow, I'm really dizzy because I just had several major surgeries and I'm coming out of anesthesia and also I have several head wounds. Can I get some help? And then Octavia's like, no, because my face just got stabbed wide open.
Ooh, yeah.
So there's like this whole chase scene and we see various dead bodies and there's rain and slippery stairs. And
Wilford Brimley.
It's not Wilford Brimley.
It's not?
It's not.
You lied to me yesterday.
I was wrong.
Ah, who is it?
I forgot his name.
Professional Mike Wickelike?
No, I know him. No, I fucking know his name. I just can't
remember
like
his name.
He's
like a legit dude.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, we've seen him and stuff. It's just an easy mistake to make.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the mustache.
Hold on, let me pull it up real quick.
All right,
now that we've made a federal case of it. Okay, she's just credited as Nurse Daniels. It doesn't say Nurse Octavia Daniels. Okay. I'm thinking that the other nurse was just like, they were just being extras on a set and she called her Octavia and it got caught on camera. That's what I think happened.
And Octavia didn't break character. Yeah.
Richard Real.
I've never heard of that name before.
Yeah, you've definitely seen him and stuff.
Okay.
He's in Office Space.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. He's in a lot of stuff. I've seen him on a lot of like TV stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is the mustache and the general
size?
Yeah, I was gonna say stature, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's Buddy. He's Lori's friend to the end. Which is pretty quick for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike was like outside in the parking lot and he notices Buddy pull up. So he decides to go over to the little security building, which is where Lori is hiding. He tries to go back inside, but Michael axes him in the back and kills him pretty fucking hard.
Yeah.
And then he's like toying with
Lori.
Yeah. Just kind of peeking in through the windows and being creepy. And then he just bursts through. Anytime he bursts through a window in this movie, like, it's always really freaky.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a massive person.
Yeah.
It's just so weird.
Yeah. And then Lori wakes up. She's in her bed. It is October 29th, 1 year later.
I just have to say, I wish that that was where this movie stayed.
I I was really looking forward to it because I mean, you and I are both fans of the original Halloween too.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been fun to have like a Rob Zombie stylized version of that.
Yeah. See, like, I think that it's a cool way to at least do it while you're still wanting to do your own thing. You're letting people get that experience at least. But I feel like if it had been that and it got started so fast, like, and it kept that intensity throughout the entire thing, I feel like that would have been awesome. But no, they decided to just go like a different place with it. So here we are.
Annie and Chucky can hear Lori screaming at night. Apparently these nightmares are nothing new. Annie kind of like tells her dad like to eat something healthy for breakfast, and he's off to work. And then she's a good friend to Lori. She listens to her talk about her dream and how she's going to therapy. And she's like, just remember, it's just one day at a time, just one day at a time. And at therapy, Lori is talking about how she feels like she's kind of not progressing anymore. Like she's almost going backwards, which first of all, recovery is not linear.
Yeah.
I feel like that's important for everybody to remember. You can have good days and bad days, and it doesn't mean you're not getting better. It just means that, you know, this shit's complicated and it's hard.
Yeah.
And the therapist points out, like, hey, it's almost Halloween. That seems like a reasonable trigger for all of this.
She's kind of shitty, though, where she's like, well, they never found his body, by the way.
Like, well, no, I think she's pointing out. She's like, you didn't get that closure because they didn't find his body.
Yeah, I know, but the way, like, I think it even offends Lori at first because she's like, what the fuck are you saying? Because, like, at this, I mean, Lori's fully convinced that he's dead here. It's been 1 year, so, yeah.
And then she's also, like, she misses her parents because they're dead.
Yeah.
And then in the director's cut, I remember there's a scene where she like is talking about how she's just like, she is also aware that she's being kind of a shitty friend to Annie. And she talks about how she's been lashing out at her a lot.
That's a really difficult situation to be put in. Mm-hmm. Like after all of that, you're having to change to a whole other house with like, you know, your friend, which has another layer of weirdness to it, you know?
Well, and they're just constantly reminding each other of that night too.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of being there and all of their scars and
yeah, that's terrible, man.
Yeah. Loomis is a dick and a diva.
Oh boy, man. Loomis is fucking off the charts in this movie.
Yeah, he's doing a book tour or seminar or something. I don't even know. I don't know if he knows, but like he lashes out at everybody who doesn't immediately think he's great. He
gets mad because they use his old picture. He's like, that's old Loomis. I'm new Loomis. Okay, cool.
And she's like, well, the publishers think that this is a better look for you guys. No. He's very upset about it. He's just like, people ask questions that he like doesn't give a good answer to. And he's like, no, tell me I'm great. I didn't cut. And like,
he tries to play a victim too.
Yeah.
But to another degree, I don't really understand everybody blaming him, too. He's not responsible for this. He was even, like, doing what you were saying you should do. He was giving Michael up. He gave him up.
Yeah, he transferred the care. He did what he, because he said he wasn't making any progress. So that's a little bit frustrating that, like, he did what he was supposed to do, and now he's getting the blame. However, it's hard to feel too bad for him when he's literally profiting off of the misery of
and that
so many people.
I'm fine with calling him out on that. I just think it's stupid to blame him because like everybody there is just calling him his monster.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's doing like a he's doing his show, and he shows footage of him telling Michael about his mom dying.
Yeah, like, did you fucking record you telling your child this?
Can you imagine, like, that camera is, that's ultimate shitty Loomis right there.
It's in his face.
Like, that camera is, like, 2 feet from his face, and he's just like, yeah, your mom died. Like, that's fucked up, man.
And Michael fully says, you're dead.
Yeah. Oh, is that why he says that at the,
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And we see Ghost Mom. She has plans for Michael. She said, we'll get there. Don't worry. Meanwhile, Lori works at a record store for Uncle Meat, who
is a Rob Zombie character.
Who is mad at her for being late, but also says, fuck the man, be late. I don't
understand. He's barely
in this
movie.
He seems like he'd be a laid back boss to work for.
Yeah, I felt when I saw this, I was like, yeah, this would be a cool place to work at.
We get a random scene of a couple good old boys trying to get some vigilante justice against a trespasser slash, I don't know, there's an implication that maybe, like, he made the daughter uncomfortable or something. I think
she saw him or something. I don't know. Just a bunch of yeehaws trying to go out here and yeet some haws.
Well, they fuck around and they find out. So Michael beats them all up, stabs them all, and then from the meadow reaches into the tall grass and pulls up his mask.
Yep. Like, where the fuck was this the whole time, dude? This is like a thing too where it almost feels like they're doing another thing like in Halloween Kills where it's like the mask is very important to him, like that's how he turns on. And but then he takes it off like throughout the movie. I don't know.
Like, it's just in the first one, he goes back to his childhood home and he digs up under the floorboards and finds his mask. You're like, okay, weird place to store it, but I get it. In this one, it's like, just where I left it.
Did we ever see where he, like, actually came from?
No. Here's the thing. This is probably a big change I would make, is we don't need as many shots as we have of Tyler Mane hiking.
Yeah, it's a lot, right?
And it doesn't add anything. Yeah, like, you don't, it's all from clearly the same day of shooting. And so I, like...
Did a lot of walking that day.
And he's clearly not going that far because we end up in the same meadow at the end when a very injured Lori is limping through town. Yeah. We're not going that far. Why do we have so many shots of him hiking through this
very
field?
Very dramatically walked.
This was half me a mile. In high school when we lived in open fields and I would have my moody emo walks out in the rain. Like, this is me just like.
And he has a new getup too. He's. Got a hood. He's got this big fucking jacket. Where did he find somebody that had clothes as big as he is?
I don't know.
He's a fucking massive man. There's not another Joe Grizzly out there. He's already dead.
His beard is very well maintained.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a year. Maybe he has been taking care of himself. I don't know. Like, at this point, I'll believe anything.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know how much... Carrie's taking care of himself because he is eating a dog.
Yeah, a dog heart.
Yeah, which is juxtaposed to the Brackett Strode family dinner. Them eating their pizza and Lori talking about being vegetarian, which Rob Zombie's a vegan. So I feel like Rob Zombie did a lot of self-insertion onto Lori in this movie. Like, her styling is him.
That's what he wanted to do with this movie. He's like, okay, let me do a Halloween movie with me. Yeah. Like, you watch me. That's the twist. She even wears a hat.
Yeah, I'm... If
that's
you
his
told
hat,
me,
right?
Yeah, I think it's his actual
yeah,
hat.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
And his hair is... And her hair is styled like his.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that jacket is Sherry Moon's. I'm pretty sure I've seen literal pictures of her wearing that jacket.
Yeah, so yeah, he wanted to just make a movie about himself and Halloween.
He's like, and we're gonna talk about animal rights.
Yeah.
While also having Michael eat a dog heart.
Yep.
That did get a frowny face from me, by the way.
Oh, good. Yeah. Every type of death like that deserves that.
Lori inexplicably throws up during dinner.
Yeah.
There's really no explained reason. She just all of a sudden throws up.
I wonder if this is something that's cut from the director's cut, maybe.
Yeah. What if it is, then it's nothing that I
did remember. You read everything?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, I'm going off memory.
Oh, just from memory. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
I meant to watch the, I know Dead Meat has like a cut comparison video on it, and I meant to watch it, but it's been a busy day.
No, yeah. So. I getcha.
So, Mike. Kid Ghost Mike says he found Boo and he wants to be a family again. October 30th, entering Haddonfield. Loomis is at the Myers house. His assistant is like, hey, I believe in doing what you need to do to sell a book, but this is kind of bad taste.
Yeah.
And he's like, I will slap you. Bitch, I will slap you so hard. I was trying to do an Otis Driftwood there and I just got like real like angry, drunk redneck. That just didn't work.
It's okay.
Which is Otis Driftwood.
He says, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you or
yeah.
something. That's
yeah,
a really
it's a,
fucking
yeah.
weird thing to say.
She seems together enough that she could, like, she should just quit.
Just drop him.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we see her any of the rest of the movie. She's done.
Lori has tattoos on her hands and her lower back.
You think that was done since then?
I don't know.
We don't really see her in anything that would expose any of those. So it could she's a very different character from the original.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the whole point is that her trauma response is very self-destructive behavior. Not that I think tattoos are self-destructive, but
I guess
juxtaposed with who she was in the first movie.
In that state of mind, maybe a little bit, I don't know.
So she dreams about being basically Michael when he kills his stepdad in the first movie, but she's killing Annie.
Yeah.
And then she's it's hard to tell if she's possessed, if she's having a seizure, what's happening, but clearly there's an actual physical reaction happening with these dreams too. During an interview, Loomis says that the cops were incompetent and that's why the body was lost.
Yeah.
And Sheriff Chucky says, don't fuck with the Chuck. We see him getting a little angry and he's about to do some retribution book clubbing.
Yeah. I'll read and buy your book out of spite.
Michael Myers is out behind the Red Rabbit Lounge, mm-hmm. home of Deborah Myers. What a weird thing to
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That's weird. That's where she danced and...
Yeah.
Oh, I never made that connection. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So... That's shitty. So it's a... What is this? Jeff McDaniels?
No, Jeff Wayne Phillips? Jeff Phillips?
Jeff... I think it's something like that.
Jeff Philip Daniels.
That's it.
Jeffrey Daniel Phillips. He's a three-name person. Hold on.
Damn three-namers out there.
The three names get me every time because I just start throwing out all the first names I know, and I'm like, I'll eventually get to the right. Jeff Daniel Phillips.
There we go. Okay, so Jeff Daniel Phillips.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Okay. This is another instance of Rob Zombie casting his buddies for these types of movies. This guy is, he's in a lot of his shit.
They all networked with one another. I'm not mad about it.
I'm not mad about it. It makes me happy seeing all these people.
I like loyalty.
Yeah, I do too.
Real respect's real.
Yeah, I get it. This is a big stage for a lot of these people, you know? These are mostly character actors.
And Jeff Daniel Phillips' character is a guy that's working at a job he hates, but he still seeks out companionship with people who don't give a shit about him, and he tries to make random jokes or points that aren't well received because the owner of the bar really just wants to fuck the stripper.
It's a weird dynamic.
Yeah. And he's like, I thought I told you to take the trash out. So he goes out to take the trash and he's angry. He's a little embarrassed. And for some, I thought of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 with the umbrella kill.
yeah. Dude, what if he fucking did that with the umbrella in this? Zombie's like, we're doing Silent Night, Deadly Night.
I would totally watch a Silent Night, Deadly Night to Rob Zombie remake.
That's the twist. It's not Halloween. He's like, this is what I wanted to do with it. So yeah, I will say this is a really fucking brutal killing. Michael actually stomps his head after just choke slamming him onto the pavement. And that one hits for me because I watch a lot of Street Fight videos, and the slamming on the concrete, very bad. People get really fucked up with that.
Yeah.
But then you also see these people who fucking stomp on heads sometimes during these fights, and it's like, in this movie I see it and it gets crushed. I'm like, ah, fuck, that could be somebody. I don't know. It's realistic. It's brutal.
Yeah. But obviously he strings the body up inside and then kills the owner and the dancer as well.
The owner, I love his scream when he runs down the hallway. He's actually selling that shit. He's going over the top with it, but it's good.
All right. Now it's Halloween.
Yeah.
And Lori is dressed as Rob Zombie. That's my note right here. She's fully dressed as Rob Zombie. And she's like, look at this cute little pig. How can anybody ever eat you?
Yeah, this is a... What the fuck is this? Are we supposed to
It's like a random petting zoo in the middle of town.
No, I'm talking about with her. Are we supposed to be getting something from this?
I think it's just
living her life.
Yeah, it's just a moment where she's not miserable.
Slice of life moments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's important to character depth.
Yeah, that's true.
Chucky is reading a book. And here's the thing with this book. I understand that there's a lot of pictures in it, but it must be like all of these, this book came out today and Chucky's already halfway through. And then Lori's going to go to the bookstore and buy it, and she's going to get halfway through in less than an hour.
I'm pretty sure I actually saw giant-ass pictures inside the book whenever they were flipping through it. I swear to God, I think there was like a giant picture of Michael. Or like whenever Lori is showing, she's like, look at this shit. Whenever she finds out about it, she like swings it open. It's just pictures. Like he made a coloring book.
Like... that's even worse somehow. Like, not only is he profiting off the misery of others, he's doing it in such a lazy fucking way. Like, he's taking yearbook photos and putting captions on it.
Yeah, he got this chick. And like, yeah. That's okay, cool. Thanks.
TMZ does more research into what they're writing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
it is funny. But he finds out. Well, we don't know what he finds out yet. He freaks out.
Didn't he find out in the last one about the connection?
He did. Okay. Yeah. I'm saying he finds out about.
Yeah, we don't know what he's found out about, but he's clearly upset.
Yeah.
He's saying, you really fucked up this time. And he calls Annie and says, hey, as soon as you see Lori, have her call me.
Yeah. Lori notices the book being sold as she's walking downtown. And she decides to just go inside the store, and then it's implied she buys it.
Where they're doing a book signing in there. And Linda's dad walks up. He had put her little headshot in the front cover of the photo. The front cover of the book. And he's like, do you recognize that? And Lois goes, oh, well, she's a very pretty girl.
Oh, you got me another picture for the book. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm like, if your book is all pictures, surely you have a picture of Linda. Surely you've seen Linda.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he like pulls out a gun and threatens him, but it's actually an empty gun. And Lewis is like, that doesn't make me feel any better.
What the fuck was this guy thinking?
I think he was a mad, sad dad.
But was that on purpose?
No.
God damn it. Yeah, he's a pretty mad, sad dad. Okay, so he gets arrested. Yeah, all that shit.
The local cops aren't going to do anything to... Fuck, the sheriff is also a mad, sad dad. Like, he's not going to...
And when he gets extra mad and sad, he points a gun at Loomis also. Later, yeah. So,
I mean, he probably knows Linda's dad because Linda and Annie and Lori were all best friends. Yeah. So yeah, Lori is reading the book in her car, and she starts screaming and shouting, and then she drives up to the Brackett house, runs in, grabs a bag of stuff, and Annie is like, hey, my dad needs you to call him. What's going on? Hey, babe, what's happening? And Lori's like, go ahead and call your dad and tell him Angel says, fuck you. And Annie's like, what the fuck?
Who's Angel?
And so Annie calls her dad, and he's like, I need you to stay in the house. I'm going to go find Lori. And she's like, what's going on? He's like, I cannot talk to you about this right now, which props to him, like, for not telling his daughter, like, this major truth bomb about her best friend before she knows about it, you know?
Yeah.
So Lori goes to her friend Maya's house, one of the fellow workers at the record shop, and she tells them the truth. That she is Michael Myers' sister.
Mm-hmm. And basically has her whole life and her, like, the family history documented. She read the whole thing. I imagine that's pretty shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's still dealing with, like, this attack, but now she finds out that it's, like, even more personal than she thought. We cut to a late night talk show, and they paired Loomis with Weird Al Yankovic.
What?
And he calls him Mr. Weird. Which, first of all, wouldn't you say Mr. Yankovic?
I'm Mr. Yankovic.
But, like, he's mad that Weird Al's being Weird Al.
Weird Al is pretty harsh on him. but, you know, like,
I think Loomis needed it.
They're all very harsh on him. Like, the host is definitely asking him some pretty poorly... it just doesn't... It makes him come across as a bad person. He's making fun of him. of them openly, and Weird Al is just piling on.
I mean, I get it. I also like to openly make fun of him. And you have been piling on.
I have. And I just feel bad because, like, he's trying to promote. Okay, never mind. He's trying to promote this book.
I don't feel that bad. He's like,
they're talking about it. He's like, I don't want to talk about Michael. By the way, here's my book on Michael.
Yeah, he's literally, like, the host is literally, are you not profiting off of these deaths? And yeah. Loomis is like, no, buy my book about these deaths. Give me your money. Like,
yeah,
it's just.
He's definitely a shitty guy.
He's coming across as a tryhard right now.
Yeah. Well, and man, yeah. So they're brutal to him. He goes back and he is yelling in the hallways because he's been humiliated. Let's see where else.
He watches it back and it reminds me of Ben Wyatt, Human Disaster.
Yeah.
So Lori's friends want to have a mellow night
instead
of going to the party like they were planning to. And then Lori's like, no, I want to be bad for once in my life. She's ready to fully self-destruct. None of these girls respect Rocky Horror Picture Show. I wonder if they were not allowed to directly say the name of the movie or any of the characters, because they dance around it so hard. They're like, we got you this cute maid outfit.
Didn't they say Frankenfurter at one point, though?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
Okay.
I don't want to repeat the way that girl tends to phrase it, but it's in such a way, it isn't.
Yeah, I know.
It's not a cool way. It's not like a fun little punchline the way she's saying it, especially because later on when she's like hooking up with Wolfman, there's a whole lot of dick versus vagina jokes, and it's just not.
I will say, though, I appreciated this a little bit more having dressed up as Rocky Horror this past weekend.
And that's the thing that's confusing to me about this, is because the costumes, the attention to detail to them is so fucking well done.
In the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they nail it.
Yeah.
The person that's dressing as Frankenfurter looks just like Tim Curry.
That's what's confusing about it to me, is that there was clearly a lot of love done to these costumes, because those, if you buy a pre-made costume for this, it doesn't look as true to the movie as these do.
Yeah.
And I know that because we
made our own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like that it becomes like a punchline. Who's that joke for?
Right. I don't know.
I don't see the point of it. And it feels like it's kind of missing the point of Rocky Horror as well. I don't know. There's maybe a whole lot more that could be said about it. That
I don't know if that was like Rob Zombie's sense of humor or what. I don't know. Maybe it was just something that didn't land.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening, but I don't like it. I'm not comfortable with it. And it could have all been cut.
Yeah, definitely.
They could have just had a cute little Rocky Horror costume moment.
Yeah. Well, okay. So they go to the Shaggin' Wagon. And they begin to start to shag, but Michael gets the Wolfman while he's taking a pee break.
Yeah.
And then he bursts through the window of the van again, and again I'm like, holy shit. Because here he's got his mask back on. Because
we cut through time pretty drastically here. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Michael is at the Brackett house. And we just have like these slowed down flashes of Annie realizing what's happening and running.
Yeah, I remember the trailers for this movie. It was the scene right here where she's at the medicine cabinet, and she like shuts the mirror, and then boom, he's right there standing behind her. It's a really well done scene. If I would have seen that in theaters before seeing that, I would have been really mad.
And it's just,
yeah,
it's awful.
Yeah.
And it's made worse by the fact that, like, before Lori can completely self-destruct at the party, Maya gets her to leave and gets her to agree to go back to the Brackett's house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get there. And I love this moment, too. Like, this is such a weird detail that I really appreciated, is that, like, her normal jacket is way shorter than, like, her costume jacket. And it's like awkward lengths, but she's just wearing it because, like, you gotta have your fucking jacket on.
Yeah.
It's just such a very real human thing that I appreciated in this moment. Because a lot of times shows will be like, oh, we gotta find a longer coat for her to wear over her costume coat so it's not awkward. Like, yeah. No, we're just going to have the fucking weird awkward coat moment. It happens. It fucking happens.
I'm glad somebody appreciated it.
They find Annie in the bathroom, and she's still alive for now.
Surprisingly.
So Maya goes downstairs to call 911, and she's attacked while she's trying to figure out the address. And Annie dies in Lori's arms. And then Lori has to run because Michael, again, is bursting through a door.
Mm-hmm.
Chucky comes home.
Yeah, this is a really sad scene. It's very heavy. Brad Dourif really
does
sells this.
I'm not trying to like say his entire body of work is him as Chucky.
He's just, that's him though.
Yeah.
But I like seeing him as a, like as himself, you know?
Sad dad.
Well, yeah, as a sad dad. Mad sad dad. He's not mad yet. He's about to be mad.
So Lori's limping outside. A car stops for her and, in the midst of like trying to figure out what's going on because she's all bloody and whatnot, Michael comes up and attacks, and he like takes Lori and takes her to this little shack in the field.
He flips the car, man.
Yeah. Here's what's important. She can see Deborah.
Yeah. She can see her mom now. And I think little Mike too.
Yeah. So the cops hear the call that there was a report of somebody seeing Michael near that shack. So they're like, okay, we're gonna go, and they get like the whole fucking SWAT team there, like they're ready to like fucking take this fucker out.
Mm-hmm.
And Loomis shows up. Like, why are you here?
I feel like, okay, the way he phrases it, he's like, I want to help. I think he wants to do something to redeem himself in front of everybody.
But again, he's making it all fucking about him. It's not about you, dude.
I know. I think legitimately he's trying to do something
good. Yeah, but he's also legitimately making things harder because what happens is Brad Dourif says, because Loomis is like, let me go in there. I can talk to him. No, actually what Loomis says is there's no negotiating with Michael. Let me go in there and negotiate with him.
Yeah.
And Brad Dourif's character says no. And then Loomis goes in there anyway. And he's like, doing it for you, bro. And then Brad Dourif goes, God damn it. Stand down. He has to tell the whole SWAT team to stand down because now they've got.
They haven't been able to get a clear shot before.
Yeah. And now they've made it even worse because they've added an extra, like, innocent party in there.
I do appreciate how he, like, swooped in there, though. Like, he just kind of pretended to walk away, and then he, like, crouched down and just went, whoop, right through them.
Like, he made things so much harder.
Yeah.
So much worse.
But he goes in there, and he sees Lori kind of on the ground, and our eyes were still seeing Michael there with Deborah and little kid Mike holding Lori down.
Yeah, little Mike is holding her down and she can't get up, and he's like, get up. And she's like, I can't.
Yeah, she's just rolling around on the ground like Talia does whenever she wants her belly rubbed.
So he gets killed.
Michael has had enough of his shit.
Yeah,
he's like, black is a color.
Okay, you stole my joke.
Yes!
I made that joke last night while we were watching the movie.
Whoops.
Yeah, you laughed about it then, and now you're stealing my joke. Don't you dare cut this. Let everybody know that you stole my joke.
By the way, that was by Jesse. That was a Jesse original right there.
Thank you.
So I do not take any credit. But yeah, he fucking beats the shit out of him.
This does give the SWAT team a moment to shoot at Michael, though.
Yes.
So he sees that he's been shot, and Brad Dourif can see Lori like walking over to him, and he like, you know, motions for them to hold fire.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes up to him and she's like, I love you, brother. And I'm like, well, that's weird, but she's really just trying to get the knife to stab him.
Yeah.
And she stabs him a lot.
Cause he has that moment where he trusts her. Yeah. He just drops the knife. He's like, all right, you're family now.
Family.
He's Vin Diesel.
So then Lori walks out of the shack in the mask.
Yeah. No, she stabs the shit out of him.
I already said that.
Oh, whoops. Okay, so yeah, she walks out with the mask on.
And then she takes it off. And then it fades to her in this white room. And like she's like, it's a close up on his face, on her face, and she's like looking up, and it's meant to definitely like mirror Michael when he was in Smith's Grove.
Yeah.
And then Ghost Mom and the horse.
The horse is back. Yes.
The horse thankfully. Is back.
Like, hey, I'm still here, guys.
Yeah. Nay.
Bet you forgot about me.
Nay, nay. That's it.
That's
how the theatrical cut ends.
So, and this is, I assume, the same sanatorium where three would have taken place.
Sanitarium. Probably. Yeah, I think that's like.
That was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like this movie. I think it gets an undeserved amount of hate. I think it does. It's not the worst in the franchise, by and large. We've had weird, random, spooky, whatever, stylistic bullshit. Let's talk about Curse of Michael Myers for a minute, you know, where he has random flashes of things in his vision. And
you know what? When anybody defends one of the newer Halloweens, they always go, but look at Halloween 6. And you know what? They're not wrong. Like, I'm one of those guys that I prefer the, like, that era, and I realize that that's, like, a stupid fucking movie, but I love it because of that. And I don't think people are loving Halloween 2 and Halloween 3 and Ends as dumb. I think everybody that likes it actually thinks it's a legit good movie.
Here's the thing with Halloween as a whole. Besides, like, the first two, there's elements of camp to every single one of them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah. I can't deny that. I don't think that there is really any camp in these.
There's not camp in this, but I think it also definitely recognizes that there is camp in the original, and it kind of decides, or, well, not the original, but like some of the earlier movies, yeah. And it decides to like take that absurdity and play it differently. You know what I mean?
I guess I can see that. All right. Are you changing yours?
I think 7.5 is the right score for me.
Keeping it?
Yeah.
All right. What did I give it before? 6?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like this movie a little bit more. I like it a little bit more. I think it might be on the same track that Halloween 2007 was on, where I hated it, but then I started realizing it was like a good thing on its own, and then I ended up accepting it. But again, I just gotta say, I think Halloween Ends really changed my way of approaching this movie, and I think I might appreciate this one a little bit more now.
Okay.
So, Michael, I'm sad to see this Michael go, because I feel like this guy did such a great job. Like, he's so fucking creepy, so giant.
I feel like he also brought a kind of sadness to Michael that we don't see a lot either.
Yeah, I mean, he did a great job. So, but our next one's really good too. So, having said that, I think I'm going to regret this. I'm going to give it a 7.
I did it! I did it! I brought you around.
I don't want to admit it, but I can't really. I can't. That I think, though, that this is still my lowest rated Halloween. It's by far, like, I mean, so far in this run of covering them.
The pivot table will reveal all in a few months.
It will. There's no way I've gone as low as a 7. I love all of the ones before this.
Okay. What would bump it up just a little bit more for you?
Keep the mask on all the time. We can get glimpses of him without it, but it can't be as blatant as it is in this. And cut out all of, like, the weird flashing shit and the kid visions and all that. It just felt unnecessary to me. I didn't need it.
Okay.
You do that, you got a better movie in my eyes.
Talia pushed the button right as we were about to hit play. Mm-hmm. She wasn't ready for the wild ride, but she stayed on the couch, watched it the entire time with us, as did Zoe.
Yeah,
they both did. So they're both into it. I think Talia's going to give this a 7. I think she's like you. She didn't want to admit that she liked it because she was like, well, I got to go out. But then she was there for the whole ride.
She was feeding off my energy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and yeah, Zoe was there. So we've already established that.
We're not doing a sequel because this is our annual franchise.
So who'd you relate to?
I related to Annie because I think there are times where I like get very, very controlling because it's just a way for me to kind of how I respond to some shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's just it's my trauma response. It's how I want to have control over my environment around me.
Okay. I'm going to go with Loomis. Here's why. Because
you're a diva.
Well, maybe. But the main reason is because of the book with pictures. I like books with pictures. That's my jam. I think I could have really dug into Loomis's book. I would have read that one. That's it.
Okay. Okay. I have an internet review.
Where did you go with this one?
Well, I went with more positive because you're always shitting on this movie.
No, that's fine. We need to share the positive energy for this movie because a lot of people hate it. So let's get some out there.
I'm not going to read this whole thing because it's pretty long. Mm-hmm. Writer-director Rob Zombie deserves a massive amount of credit for doing his own thing here. Whereas his first film felt like a less effective paint-by-numbers remake of John Carpenter's film with just a few of his own flourishes poking through, his sequel is one of the more interesting installments in the series. There's a lot in this film that feels forced or out of place, like most scenes with Michael Myers visiting his visions of his mother, his younger self, and a random white horse. Mm-hmm. But the dramatic moments between survivors Laurie, Annie, and Annie's father are heartbreaking and played really well.
True. Is that it?
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. I think that they do play those scenes really well. And I definitely agree that the ridiculousness of just all those like weird shots of the mom and the horse and the kid, like it's just not for me. Like, I get it, that's like a style thing for him. I think he was letting his more of his editing kind of go in, because that's kind of how a lot of his movies go. They have like flashes of weird shit sometimes.
I just wish that Sherry Moon let me down, man. I defended her acting in the last one, and in this one, it was like she
didn't really have much to go with on this one, though.
It still felt very phoned in.
It was. I mean, I feel like it might have been a last-minute decision.
And I'm literally only saying that because I do... people like to shit on her acting, which I think isn't fair always.
No. She's fine.
And that's the thing, is that like I know she can act better than what she did in this movie, so it's a little frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen of her, Halloween 2007 is her best work.
Yeah.
She does a great job in that.
Yeah.
And then she followed up with this. I can understand the disappointment. Okay. Now that you got that.
We've got lots of user
reviews. We have
right?
a lot of internet reviews here, or listener reviews. So I'm just going to jump right into them. Huh? On Twitter.
Twitter.
Aquile Boobs says, I wanted to like it because I was a fan of Zombies first go around, but I just didn't. And he shrugs. Tyler says, this one explores trauma pretty well, while also I feel like kind of painting the image of that Michael never really grew up and he's still a confused, dark-minded child at heart. Loomis being a bitchy celebrity diva is so funny.
Right.
Also, hi, Weird Al.
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, where like Michael, his trauma, to use this phrase yet again, arrested development. Like, he never really moved past that point in his life where he, you know, shut down and stopped speaking entirely.
And so. I like describing Loomis as a bitchy celebrity diva.
I mean,
so accurate.
Not wrong.
Yeah, that's very on point right there. Boo World Order says, the acting deserved a better story. Harris, Taylor Compton, and Dourif worked their asses off for a story about a fucking horse.
Except the horse really isn't in there that much.
But at the beginning, that's what introduces it. We're made to like think that it.
We've
might
all been
be...
gaslit into thinking that the horse is more important than it is.
I know. Like, you think that it's actually a prevalent part of the movie throughout the entire time, but it's barely at all.
Maybe that's what I would cut.
That right there, the horse.
Well, no, the hiking is still more egregious to me.
Okay.
But after the hiking, then I would cut the horse.
Okay.
Have him ride the horse through the field. That's more interesting.
Okay, I can get behind that. I can. Then we enter campy.
Yeah.
That's when it gets campy.
Yes.
All right. K Kendra says she just shared the picture of Danny DeVito from It's Always Sunny shaking his head. Nope. All right. And on Instagram, Taxidermy Potato says, haven't seen it. Well, why the fuck not?
Watch it, man. Here's the thing. I know a lot of people that, you know, like Boobs' review was that didn't like it because they liked the first one. But yeah. They are different kinds of movies, you know?
They are. They're very, very different specifically. Movies. And, you know, I was right there with you, Boobs. But I just kind of, I feel differently. I don't know. I feel differently this time.
But, Tater, I'm going to recommend that you check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Have the experience. Decide how you feel.
Yeah. Bedlam IOI says, it's okay. Always hard to top an original when it was done well.
That's true. Halloween 2 is a really done really
it
well.
It started off exactly like it too. Yeah. That's the disappointing thing for me.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm thinking about that again. Do I lower my score?
No, it's too late. It's already written down.
That really pissed me off.
I've already walked
man.
Too far.
I would have. That's my change. Make that movie.
Okay.
Okay. That's my change.
Okay.
Just finish that movie. Keep the intensity cranked all the way up, all the way to the end. But yeah, it is hard to follow up. Ray Cartagena says, sometimes I'll go on Peacock just to watch the Weird Al part, but that's it.
I like the Weird Al part, though. It's funny.
I want to mention this is the guy that for the 2007 one, he bought the still book.
Yeah. Still book in 2007.
And he thought he was getting the original, yeah. So I'm glad that you find something from this one to appreciate. It got you to watch this one at least.
Yeah.
Always in Civil Unrest says, I liked it, but not my favorite Halloween in the franchise.
That's fair. That's how I feel about it. I like it. I think it doesn't deserve as much hate as it gets, but I'm not going to say it's the best in the franchise.
No, definitely not. Far from it. Pronounced Alicia says, loved one and two.
Okay. Yeah.
So you like the whole duology. Yeah. Very good. We do too. CubeSave says, one of my favorite movies in general. What a wild one.
It is a wild one.
I've talked about Rob Zombie with this guy. He is a pretty big fan, especially Devil's Rejects, I think. But yeah, good shit. And last one, Michael E. Howard says, Halloween 2 review. This movie, while revered by many, is the perfect example of the lasting effects of trauma entwined within horror. The acting is amazing and only adds to the frantic nature of PTSD. Diving deep into the minds of both the killer and the victim, we are left with a deep character study. 8 out of 10.
Hell yeah.
Man, you vibed with him hard at this time, because that was a lot of the stuff that you were talking about.
That's what I like about the movie. And here's the thing with horror movies, is that like, if you have a franchise go on long enough, you eventually have to acknowledge that there's a fair amount of trauma going on.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that's Scream part of one it. Of the things I like about Scream 3 is that Sydney's living alone on a farm going by a fake name. She's got a job. She can work from home. And her only friend's a dog.
Yep.
Like, that tracks for me.
The dog friend, though, is pretty cool. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's a cool dog.
Yeah, it was a good dog. Yeah. Good boy. But yeah. And if you don't do that, then you're just left with, like, it kind of becomes unrealistic because it's like.
Yeah. Like Texas Chainsaw, when Sally is like, I'm going to get revenge on that guy. And it had been like 70 years. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, Sally?
Yeah.
I don't understand your motivation here. Just live.
Well, it's not even that she wants revenge. Like, okay, fine. But she's so bad at it.
Yeah,
she's spent so many decades trying to get revenge.
That's kind of
they did really shit the bed with it.
They did her so fucking dirty, man. Because some people are like, she's the original final girl. And then they go out there and they will out this version of her where she can do shit and she gets like killed pretty hardcore.
But not when she should have.
No.
She gets shotgun blasted to the chest.
Yeah.
And she's still like crawls over and she's like, by the way, take my gun.
Okay. That's a fun movie.
It's a fun movie. It's messy as hell.
We're going to talk about that sometime soon,
eventually.
Guys. Definitely.
All right. So coming up on Sunday.
To be or not to be. My pick.
Yep.
My pick.
So we don't know what that's going to be yet, but stay tuned for that. And then we realized about how long ago did we start recording? About an hour and 45 minutes ago that next Thursday is November, and we have most of our November schedule set, but we have a lot of guest recordings, which we're really excited about, but they're not starting until into November. So, you know, just follow us on social media and check out our schedule, and we'll post where to watch as, you know,
that's a,
as
we do. You know what? Halloween surprise, dropping on Halloween Day schedule.
Okay.
How's that sound?
That sounds good to me.
All right. There you go. Halloween present from us.
We'll drop the whole schedule on Halloween, but I feel like we need to drop. We always post our where to watch over the weekend so people can movie prep if they want to.
True.
We'll figure it out. We'll get it. We'll get us right. Just follow us on social. Just check our social media every day. Just do it. We got Facebook. We got Instagram. Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast. We got our Twitter, Least Fave Pod. We've got a TikTok. I've logged out of it, so I actually legitimately don't know what the handle is.
Just checked out.
No, my phone booted me off.
I know.
It, as it does. We also have a website, which is leastfavoritescarymovie.com, and our email address is leastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com.
That's it.
And you can find us on Patreon.
Yes. Shout out to Eric and Vivi.
Yeah. And if you want to be like them, if you want some bonus episodes like our song lyrics or movie taglines game or next month's Muniz era revisit.
Cool, baby.
Stay Alive Unrated. You can get that at our budget tier for $10. And you'll also get like early access and voting, and you can see our show notes and see all my little sad faces and try and decipher my handwriting.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a challenge, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it really adds something to it.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, rate, review, and subscribe. It helps other people find us. Mm-hmm. And just thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you guys.
We really do think that horror is a community, and especially after this last weekend with Scarefest.
Yeah, man. It's so awesome. I love it so much.
All right. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Do you remember when we went to go see 31 in theaters and they played gore horror beforehand and Sherry Moon was like the star of that music video?
Yeah, I remember that. That was crazy.